This is Sportsline on WRMJ and WRMJ.com.
He breaks free. He's inside the 20, the 10, the 5.
A weekly in-depth look at the local high school sports scene.
Touchdown Mercer County. Touchdown Golden Eagles.
Sportsline is brought to you by your local country financial representatives, Tracy Bigham, Jason Potter, and Brent Bigham, offering insurance for your life, health, home, auto, farm, or business.
Get a launch of three at the gun. No good, and the Rockets have won the game. The Rockets head back to state.
By 6140 Running Galesburg, your spot for custom-fitted running and walking shoes, Hey Dude shoes and Birkenstock sandals, plus Red Wing and Wolverine work boots.
A three at the gun is no good, and this game is over! The Tigers have won! They're going to celebrate! Purple and gold converging on the Don Morris Gymnasium floor! Unbelievable!
By Diamond Ag, your local ag retailer supplier, built from your local specifications with locations in Alito, Alexis, and Knoxville.
She throws the first three in a row for Lockridge! The Rockets have won three state titles in a row in softball.
And by Dale Jones with Merit Auctions. If you have farmland or machinery to sell, call Dale at 309-299-6400. And now, from the Dale Jones Auctioneer Studios in downtown Lido, here's Jim Taylor and Ty Taylor with Sportsline.
It is the WMJ Sportsline on a Saturday morning from the Dale Jones Auctioneer Studios in downtown Lido. We get set for a Saturday of high school basketball from the, what they're calling it, the Brick House Shootout. I know we'll talk about that with our featured guest today, Scotty Verstrait, who helps organize that thing, former Orion head basketball coach and, of course, a referee. We see him a lot around the area. But two compelling games, I think, East Peoria and Rockridge today. I know, learning a little bit about East Peoria, I think two really good sophomores in the state that they have. And then the Sherrard Tigers get a chance to take on a pretty good team from the Chicago Public League in Dyett.
Number six in the state.
So those are two pretty good matchups. And East Peoria 3A, I believe, and they play in the Middle Illinois, which is a pretty good 3A conference.
Yeah, if you look at the Nesto Hoops rankings, which we do, of course, and he does a great job, he has East Peoria this week as the 25th ranked team in 3A.
Ah. So what is the situation then with turning around and playing a game last night and having to play these matinee games on Saturday?
Yeah, it's a big turnaround, and it's a big, you know, you go from playing a conference game Friday, where I know Sherrard and Rockridge each played teams that they were, I think, pretty heavy favorites against, and Sherrard taking on Mercer County, and then Rockridge against Monmouth Rosa, both able to take care of business, winning by, you know, around 20 points. I think Sherrard ended up winning by 19 last night, and Rockridge won by 20 over Monmouth Roseville. But to transition from that, and I know for both teams, winning a conference championship means something, where those are games you can't just look past Mercer County. You can't just look past Monmouth Roseville for both Rockridge and Sherrard. But now you turn the page to playing, you know, less than 24 hours later against an elite opponent in Dyett for Sherrard and in East Peoria for Rockridge. So it is challenging. I know in both teams, I think Sherrard goes a little deeper into the bench than Rockridge. But again, like, to play against a team like Dyett, you need your top four, top five guys to log a lot of minutes. So it'll be interesting to see how both teams transition today. But talking about last night, Sherrard and Mercer County, boy, that was a fun game, especially early. Mercer County came out of the gates really hot, actually led by 10 points in the second quarter, 24-14. And there was an incredible crowd at that game last night. Sherrard had like the youth cheer clinic thing, so that added to it. But they've had huge crowds all season long. And Mercer County brought a really nice visiting crowd. And I mean, early in the game, it felt like almost a regional type atmosphere with the loud crowd on both sides. Mercer County just hit shot after shot after shot after shot. I'd like to know how many shots they made in a row at one point in the second quarter. But again, extend the lead to 24-14. Sherrard, though, from that point called a timeout and then went on a run that spanned three quarters to 37-7 to take control and pull away, and really weren't threatened much in the second half after it was tied 26-26 at halftime. So I was really impressed with Sherrard. I really think that even though they were trailing by as many as 10, they didn't really even play that bad in the first half. It just was Mercer County was awesome in the first two quarters of that game last night, where I said on the broadcast, I think that had to have been their best stretch of basketball season. And I know they've won some games in blowouts, but the caliber of opponent they played last night in Sherrard, and to really kind of take it to them early and deliver the first punch or two punches of the night, I think is a great step forward. And I really think that, like, the kids for Mercer kind of deserve a lot of credit, and I really do believe that they're extremely well coached with Coach Seedam and Coach Broad on their bench, and Joe Hanlon, too, does a great job as an assistant. Like, they had a great game plan, I thought, early, and of course, when you play for 32 minutes, that's a long time, and when the other team has the better players, it's hard to hang on for 32 minutes, and Sherrard just eventually, you know, once they got on that run, they just outmanned them in terms of, you know, skill and athleticism and size and strength, where it just is hard, and depth too. But I was really impressed with Mercer County's effort from top to bottom, you know, from Coach CDM all the way down to the kids that played on the floor. Really solid effort last night, and I think they deserve a lot of credit for what they were able to do and the competition level they were able to play with against a team like Sherrard last night.
Now, it's interesting, you know, listening to that game last night where it's a regular season game, and you think, what happens if it's 24-14 in a postseason game? You know what I'm saying? Because how do you handle that? Because, you know, if the wheels fall off, the season's over. Where I don't know if that factors in the mindset last night. Now, I always say, though, you know, just watching postseason basketball for 35 years, it takes one bad quarter and your miraculous season can be over. And the testimony I'll always give is basically the one bad half of basketball did in the best ever team in any sport I ever saw in this area for 35 years. They should have went to state and they didn't do it. And that's why I say basketball is one of those sports where if you have one bad quarter at the wrong time, you know, it's the agony of the sport. And that's why it was nice to see Mercer County play for the 16 minutes, 26-26 at halftime, led by 10. I want to see that in the postseason. You know, now work on playing 18 minutes or 22 minutes, and then when the postseason rolls around, I think something to build on from last night for them.
Hopefully. Yeah, and I think, though, too, like, when you're Mercer County and you play that good
and still
in the first half, not even lose by 20, but at halftime it's tied.
Yeah,
I mean, you play the best you've played all year, and you look up and we're tied at 26, and we've got to do this for 16 more minutes and that's something I said on the broadcast too last night, where we've talked about this transition from the Lincoln Trail to the track, where, like, if they put together a half like that in the Lincoln Trail, like, you know, last year obviously they were really good, but this year even I think they blow anybody in that league out, you know, but this year in the track you look up and we're tied after that, and then we lose, you know. But again, it was a great effort, and I think that Sherrard impressed me last night because, again, like I said earlier, I don't think they really played that bad. It just was Mercer County did a lot of really good stuff early on. But to be able to weather the storm, they've done this two games in a row now, dating back to last week against Monmouth Roseville. They get down early, and in the second half, they, you know, rally and just end up winning, going away. And yes, the caliber of opponent has been, you know, probably the two weakest teams in the conference in Mercer County and Monmouth Roseville this year, but I think for the postseason, it is a positive because those kids did not get rattled and they stayed the course and stick to, you know, the game plan and were able to end up pull it out where, you know, what they say, cream rises to the top. And again, 32 minutes is a really long time, and they're able to kind of, you know, overcome that, not necessarily slow start, but Mercer County's kind of flurry early. But on the same side of that, for Sherrard, what Coach Johnson said post-game, I agree with him. He's like, and he didn't mean any offense when he said it, but he's like, you know, against Mercer County and Monmouth Roseville, we can get down 10 and come back. But he's like, there are some teams that we play that if we do that, we're not going to win. He's like, one of them is tomorrow, meaning today, against Dyett, and one of them is, you know, next Friday against Rock Ridge, right? If you want to get over the hump, and like he said, one of them was West Hancock. We got down early, and we didn't win. So to get over the hump fully and to win a regional, to win a conference championship, you can't have slow starts like that. So today is a big test for Sherrard to hopefully get off to a little bit of a quicker start to try to compete with a team that is in the top 10 in the state, mm-hmm. number 6 in the AP poll. And again, there's a chance if Sherrard and Rockridge take care of business this weekend, I think probably going into the game next Friday could be a top 10 game between both teams ranked in the top 10 if they're able to get wins this weekend.
Yeah, and getting back to like strategy from last night, and we talk about, well, if it is a postseason game now, from a Mercer County strategy standpoint, if you go up 10 in the postseason against Sherrard, do you play a little bit different than with possessing the basketball without a shot clock or not?
You could, but again, like, to me, you can try to slow it down, but the way Sherrard defends, I think all you're going to do is start turning the ball over because you get him to run around and trap, where their success was they were taking open shots and making them. And I'm not a fan, and I don't think it's a winning strategy, especially if it's the second quarter to start taking the air out of the ball and stop playing, because to me, you're not going to hold on for, what, 20 minutes of game time up by 10, stop and play an offense.
Well, I always say, if you're the underdog, the best way to win is shortening the game.
No, I agree. I agree, but, you know.
And when I heard up 10, I'm like, ooh, this could be interesting tonight. But as you said, credit them for clawing back, and they've been able to do that several times this year. But, you know, against the elite opponent, that's what happens if you get behind. You can get drilled, and that's what happened against West Hancock. So today's one of those kind of measuring stick games where they're playing a very good team in Dyett, and then they turn around next Friday and get Rockridge.
And on the other side, I mean, too, you can say this, where if it starts 37-7 and then Mercer kind of goes on a 24-14 run or whatever, we're not talking about, you know, what happened to Sherrard, right?
Yeah,
so,
right.
I mean, at the end of the day, they played 32 minutes and the score was 62-43. It was competitive for a half, and the second half, Sherrard really wasn't challenged much. And but like I said, I was impressed by Mercer County. That was a heck of an effort and a heck of a game plan they put together. But, you know, sometimes, like I said, the other team just has, you know, better players and better athletes, and that's what it was last night, where Sherrard just, you know, when you look at just the body type of the kids on the floor, Mercer County doesn't have a kid who looks like Ryland Carr. They don't have a kid who looks or moves or jumps like James Blackwell or Carter Brown. You know, they're just kind of a different level of athlete than Mercer County is right now. And Aiden Taranez's progression has been so great to see as he's kind of worked back into basketball mode. He got 5 points, a couple of big shots. And Sherrard last night made 11 three-pointers.
Wow.
11. 11 of 14 from the line, too. So, yeah, they're a really good team, and I'm excited to see this game with the Dyett Eagles out of the Chicago Public League today. Hopefully we can go 2-0 today at Wharton.
Yeah, and then Landon Bull had 35 points last night.
66-46, Rockridge won over Monmouth Roseville. Yeah.
So he's climbing up the impressive individual scoring chart at Rockridge that has a lot of impressive names, that's for sure.
He is number 7 right now, and the next players are, if he can get to like 6, he's got a chance to get to 3, because they're all within like 20 or so points of each other. So it'll be kind of fun to watch him chase that. I know Caleb Kunico is closing in on 1,000 career points. He's, I think, around 90 or so away, depending on how many he scored last night. I didn't see the box score. I know he was hurt and didn't play last Friday against Orion. And speaking of Orion, oh my gosh,
wow.
71-42 over Riverdale. Holy smokes.
Well, and then, you know, they had a chance to beat a good opponent earlier in the week where they lost in double OT to Rock Falls. Was that a game? That game was in the 80s, right?
88-80 in double overtime.
Yeah. But
Kyler Owens had 37
that's
points.
That's the type of scoring that they, I mean, the output that they can provide. And I think, again, that's a team that, man, I wouldn't want to play late in the season in the postseason.
They're scary every year in the regional because they are a team that they're one of those teams that they'll have nights where no matter what you do, you're going to lose to them, because if they just throw in everything they throw up, which they're capable of doing every now and then, I mean, can't do anything against them.
Don't you? They'll be in the regional. They should be in a regional championship game, shouldn't they, or not?
I would think so. I mean, I would think.
And they'll either be playing Rockridge or Sherrard.
If you look at the top 4 seeds in that subsectional, it will be, I think the top 4 are pretty clear. Now, the order, I think, is still kind of unclear. It'll be, in some order, Rockridge, Sherrard, Macomb, and Orion in the top 4. And I think the winner of next week's game between Rockridge and Sherrard will determine who the one seed is. And the loser will be two. Because I do think, and Macomb's had a good year, but you know, I don't think they play as difficult of a schedule as Rockridge or Sherrard. And both Rockridge and Sherrard have some really good wins. Talking about Sherrard has a win over Rockridge that should help them in seeding if they split with them. And, you know, if there is a split to Rockridge, or even if Rockridge gets swept by Sherrard and loses again to him on Friday, they have a really good win against West Hancock. And the schedule Rockridge has played, I mean, oh my gosh, the toughest schedule in the state in 2A. So I think they'll be the top two. I would think Macomb, unless they have like a bad loss in the second half, will be seeded third and Orion probably fourth, which means...
So what does that mean for the regional then when you have the 2 and 3 seed are the hosts, right? Macomb and Sherrard.
Right. So Sherrard would go there and then Rockridge, depending on who the 2 is.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying what if Sherrard is the 2 seed and Macomb is the 3 seed? Aren't they both the
regional? No, Sherrard's the sectional. Mercer County's the regional.
Oh, okay, that's right. Yeah, I thought I got that mixed up. Yeah. All right. Well, that'll be interesting to see how that all sorts. And there's some very important games coming up. And, of course, all eyes are on next Friday's game between Sherrard and Rockridge.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. It's when I was leaving Alex Johnson, he called it the Ty Taylor Bowl. That's what he called the Rockridge Sherrard game. Him and Ethan Earl were on the floor working through some stuff, getting ready for diet tomorrow when I was leaving. And then another funny story about last night. So I actually drove Tim Seedam and Morgan Bratt home to Aledo from Sherrard High School. I don't know if the bus left them or if they ended
or they
up
got mad because the post game show was too long.
Yeah, potentially. Or they because I had to talk to
we
both
ain't
coaches.
Waiting.
But so anyway, I drove me, Coach Seedam and Coach Bratt loaded into the WRMJ company car, and we drove from Sherrard High School to Mercer County High School, and hilarity ensued for the 20 to 30 minutes in the car. But it was fun, kind of just getting to talk to them like after the game. Because you could tell they were kind of frustrated just because, I mean, they had the great start and they know too that it was going to be hard to, with, you know, keep that up for the whole game. But I think pretty happy though, pleased as well with the effort they put on the floor. But yeah, that was just kind of a funny story where I ended up driving them home last night from Sherrard to Aledo. Oh man, I said we need to do this every single road game. This is, we need to start doing this. If you don't have any kids, ride the bus home. That's what we need to do.
All right, and then we look at the schedule today again with the shootout opportunity playing at, well, they call it the Brick House Shootout, and they're looking for a presenting sponsor, I think, next year to call it whatever, the Brick House Shootout presented by whatever. So there's a business opportunity for somebody out there. But, you know, East Peoria and Rockridge, I think, compelling matchup. You talked about Diette and Sherrard, and then Rockridge gets another great opportunity on Monday, taking on Morgan Park out of the public league. That's Io DeSumo's alma mater. And then who? Marcus Levette played at Morgan Park, right? Mm-hmm. They've had other really good
players.
They've
won 5 state titles. I think they're second behind Simeon.
Yeah, so they'll be at Wharton Fieldhouse. And unfortunately, you know, the way the draw works, that Sherrard got stuck playing Quad City Christian School on Monday. It would have been nice to see them get an opportunity to play maybe one of the better 3A or 4A programs up at Wharton Fieldhouse. But it is what it is when you try to schedule those shootouts. And
yeah, and I think, to me, you can't complain too much because you get the game with Diette. And, I mean, that's an awesome opportunity to play a top, you know, 5 team in the state, top 6, I guess, they're number 6 this week. But you look at Sherrard, you know, what they've done with their schedule. They played Sterling, you know, they've played Rockford Christian, who's still undefeated and in the top 10 in 2A. They have this game with Diette coming up. Of course, they play Rockridge twice, and they've played West Hancock as well. And then I know they've got a game coming up with Dixon, who's had a good year later in the second half of the season. So I really like what they've done with their schedule, and they've really kind of ramped it up with this run they've been on the past couple of seasons with some really good teams. And I was talking with Coach Johnson. We had to record his pregame interview earlier in the day last night, and he said that, I asked him, I was like, do you know off the top of your head what Sherrard's single season record for wins is in boys basketball? It's 23. And that was the year they went to state, right, with Eric Lawson and mm-hmm. Eric Hutchins. So They have 16.
Brian Brooks.
They've got 16 right now. So they got a chance to potentially break that record.
And the open date, any word on scheduling somebody yet or not?
I talked with him about that. They've had some conversation. I believe he said one of the schools that there's been preliminary talks with is Christ the King out of Chicago, which is in the top 10. But he just said they're not sure if either school is going to commit to making a three-hour trip, you know, just in to do put that all logistically together in 2 weeks. So right now, nothing has been scheduled. That'd be an awesome game, but I think...
Now, are they like in the Chicago Catholic League, or are they the public league, or what?
It's not a public school.
So they would be in the Chicago Catholic League, maybe?
Right, but yeah. So, but they're in the top 10, so... But I don't know if that'll end up happening. That just is what he told me, so... Yeah. And then... it'd be cool if they could get that together, but if not, I mean, again, it's hard to say, okay, we're going to get on the bus and go drive all the way to the city on a Saturday, six hours round trip.
I hope they do it.
So, but anyway.
And then still, when are they announcing the Rock Ridge opponent at the Riverton shootout?
This that coming week.
Because that should be a tremendous matchup where they have the opportunity maybe to play the likes of Benton or somebody
this coming
like
week.
That. Yeah.
And then I wanted to mention another thing. So last night, if you were listening to the game, so, and this happened to you too, the thing you dropped behind the bleachers at Sherrard was the laptop case, yeah, right, for our computer. The thing I dropped was my phone. Yeah. And it I didn't know that there was like a gap, but there is. Mm-hmm. And it was, I put it down at the end of a commercial, like to my right, bumped into it, heard through the headset like it's scraping down the wall and just the thud on the ground. I heard that with the headphones on all the way up top, and I was like, oh my lord. So I said, I made a joke about it on the air, and Jansen Bender, he listens, you know, at the games, and so he said right away, he got up, went over to the principal and said, hey, we need to get a custodian underneath the bleachers to get Ty's phone.
Because you have to go out in the commons.
So
area
they got my phone. Space. Jansen brought it up to me, and he gave it to me. And while my phone was gone, he had sent me a couple of texts. He wanted a shout-out to some Sherrard alumni listening from the 2001 team, Travis Haynes, Zach Olson, and Dave Egger.
So where is Travis Haynes at now?
They said listening from Lake Carroll, Illinois.
No kidding.
And I mentioned on the air, I gave you this idea this week at work, and I mentioned this on the air, so we're probably going to have to do it now because they've heard it. I want next year, 2026, a Sportsline show to be a commemorative episode on the 2001 Sherrard upset of Allaman. Wouldn't that be fun? We get some of the, like, Jansen and Coach Jones in, and maybe Coach Hutton.
Oh, yeah.
Don't you think that we... I think that's a good idea.
I love it.
We can do that.
I argue that that's the greatest broadcast ever on this stage.
So maybe
not because of me, just because of the dynamic.
And next year, maybe we could do that like in between maybe the winter and spring seasons to do that. Cause I think that is something that would be kind of fun to rehash. Cause I said that on the air last night too. So I was there and I was like two, and there was a picture, right?
Your sister was there too.
Oh, Tess was there.
Mm-hmm.
How old was she? Like
just
less than a year.
Yeah. Nope. Yeah.
So, but anyway, there's a picture of me, right, with Jansen holding me,
yep,
as like a 2-year-old kid.
Yeah.
That picture needs to be found. I need that picture. Oh my God.
Your mom will be able to find it somewhere. I've seen it. Yeah.
Awesome. Number 43, just like Brody, right?
That's right. Good times.
Yeah.
Second generation. So, and then kind of just a workmanlike performance. I mean, Rock Ridge is just, I mean, kind of just, you know, guiding their way through another Rock Ridge typical season, it looks like. You know, after that loss to Sherrard, it feels like 7 years ago.
Yeah, it does.
It's like, oh, man, this season's going to be different. Well, other than losing a conference game, which is a great rarity for them, they have really, I mean, kind of ran the table and still, you know, they're still the team to beat. That's the team right now that, just because their body of work over the last 10 years, they just continue to, when the lights shine bright, they respond.
That's going to be a zoo on Friday. That is going to be a great time, man. I'm excited for that. And I'm excited to see if Rock Ridge, I mean, they're playing two really quality teams the next couple of days in East Peoria today and then Monday against Morgan Park, where And then, you know, obviously that game with Sherrard means so much for both teams. So I just am really excited for the week ahead for both teams to kind of see how they're able to navigate through this really tough stretch. Probably maybe, you know, the toughest stretch the rest of the way of the regular season in terms of the quality of teams back to back to back they're all playing. So, yeah.
Now, do they have Tuesday games, both of them, or not? Are they both off?
No, because they both play Monday.
Yeah.
So they both play Monday, and then they're both off till Friday.
All right. Well, there is a lot of storylines building for that, that's for sure. And then the one seed, as you mentioned, on the line, I think unequivocally the one, whoever wins the game, without question, will be the number one seed in the subsectional.
And that is a big deal because I would not want to play at Macomb against Macomb in a regional championship game. No. So if and the winner gets to stay much closer to home and gets to play in Aledo. So, yeah, a lot on the line in that game next week. Obviously, the conference, I mean, I think Sherrard would virtually wrap up. Not wrap, I don't want to say finish it, but they'd have a two-game lead in the league if they're able to win that game on Friday. So, big things upcoming. Can't wait.
And then just what about kind of the setup today then? Back-to-back, Sherrard and Rockridge plays the first game today in the noon hour, followed by
11:30 pregame.
Okay,
and then Sherrard and Dyett immediately following. They play back to back.
Yeah, so I would think that there'll be a lot of purple and gold watching the maroon team play, and a lot of maroon watching the purple and gold team.
And
play.
UT has a game today. Moline has a game today too up there. Alleman and Quad Cities Christian play the last game of the night. So a lot of local teams playing. There's never a bad time to go watch a game at Wharton Fieldhouse, and exciting. It's cool. It's going to be cool to see, you know, Sherrard get to play there again. It's been a long time, I think, since the Tigers have got to play in that setting, and they get a top 10 team they get to take on. So going to be a lot of fun, and we're just so used to Rockridge playing in games like this. It's just like, ho-hum, here they go again, playing in an awesome venue against a great team. Really looking forward to the day today. There's not a better place to be at than Wharton Fieldhouse, and hopefully a lot of people come out to enjoy some really good high school basketball. There are some great small school games. There are some great big school games today. East St. Louis is in that field. The Flyers, man. That's Coach Harris's mom's alma mater, the East St. Louis Flyers. Batavia is in the field as well. So, yeah, a lot of fun basketball today.
Well, and you're going to hear Scott Verstraete talk about it coming up here momentarily on the WMJ Sportsline with what, you know, they've done to try to organize this shootout and, you know, the flavor of it, and then using, you know, Wharton as a backdrop, and then kind of the great opportunity where they do it over the MLK weekend, where you get games on Saturday and Monday, which I think is pretty impressive, where you get the, you know, two games in a shootout. And then I was thinking about, you know, it was pretty neat, like back in the day, where small schools, when they initially got to experience Wharton, was when the CBA had the Quad City Thunder, and their original home before they moved to the Mark was Wharton Fieldhouse. Mm-hmm. And local high school teams would always play the kind of tune-up game for the Quad City Thunder. I remember the first game I ever broadcast at Wharton Fieldhouse was Westboro, coached by Jay Bizzari, taking on Kewanee Weathersfield.
The Geese.
And they were both really good teams in that era, and it was so cool.
What year was that?
1992.
Did Morgan Broad play on that team? Or
no,
was he...
that would have been like the Leathers twins and that really good team at Westmore. And then I'll never forget the one year when they moved to, because you had a chance to see, now, Ronnie Fields, he coaches who?
Hope Academy.
So Ronnie Fields, the first ever CBA game he was going to play in was at the Quad Cities at the Mark, and he was playing for the Rockford Lightning. And that day, that night, Rockridge played Riverdale in the prelude game that we broadcast.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I just remember back in those days, it was pretty cool that they would give those schools the opportunity to play before the Quad City Thunder. And like that, you know, that was basically the CBA is the equivalent of the G League in the NBA, where it's, you know, guys that play in the league. And it was just pretty cool that the kids got that experience.
This is like off the path now, but you mentioned that story. Now I have to tell something. So something crazy that I remember, I think I was in junior high at Mercer County, and we hosted at the 2A high school regional that year. And there was like bad weather that week. And no, it must not have been. It must have been maybe the girls regional, because the boys would have been the team that was still playing in the regular season. But there was like bad weather, and they had to reschedule something. And because of it, the girls regional championship game, I think, got moved to Joy. So this is like in like the early 2010s. There was a regional championship game played at the Westmer High School gym in Joy after the Westmer closed. So I thought that was pretty cool. I just remember that when you were telling that story.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, yeah.
Who were the teams playing down there? You remember?
It might have been like Riverdale. I forget who it was, but I remember seeing the picture. I remember that happening when I was a kid.
So the last ever regional championship game that was played at Westmer Boys was Alleman and Rock Ridge.
Oh,
and
wow.
Larry Schulte was the head coach of Alleman at the time, and Jerry Bellmeyer was the head coach of Rock Ridge. And I'll never forget. I mean, that was like kind of Alleman at the height of Alleman, where their enrollment was still probably in the 400 to 500 range. And I'm like, man, they're coming out to Joy to play. And it was so crazy seeing like the green and white following
in that gym.
And it was packed, and there wasn't a seat to be had because how small it was. And I just remember that great environment over there that night. Well, all week. I mean, hosting a regional all week was pretty interesting. But I mean, those memories add up over the years, that's for sure.
I've got a few other Westmer stories briefly here to tell now that we've talked about
this. They'll love that.
Yeah, so one that I thought was so funny. So Joe Hanlon, who's one of Mercer County's assistants, he's Byron alum, lives in the Quad Cities now. He got married over the summer to a Sherrard grad. So that was what he was joking about today. He's like, I've never seen a purple and gold tiger, because Byron is orange and black, right? So we were talking about that, and then he was telling a story that when he first, because he went to college initially at Blackhawk to play golf, and he knew Coach Sedam from Coach Sedam's time in Byron. That's how they got together. So they were playing together in a men's league in Orion in boys basketball during that time, where Coach Sedam was there working, and then Joe was going to Blackhawk. So they played as part of like pickup games over at Orion, and Joe was trying to figure out, okay, like where he knew Coach Edom was from the area, knowing him from Byron. He's like, so where is like your hometown from, Joy? He's like, oh, it's about 40, 45 minutes west of here. And Joe's like, I went through Joy like a couple of weeks ago. And Tim was like, why? And where were you going? And he's like, oh, I was going to New Boston. And Tim was like, what? Like, what were you doing there? Well, Joe, his wife's sister lives in New Boston, is married, so that's where he was going. But that, he thought that was hilarious. And then Coach EM also said one of his high school coaches, I forget the name, at Westmer, now the superintendent at Pecatonica, who's the 1A favorite to win the boys basketball state title. Everything comes up Westmer, blue
so
and red.
That would be Chad, what's his last name?
I don't remember the last
Carlson.
Name.
Carlson.
Yes, yes.
So
another one.
I'll tell you the great story about Chad Carlson, because he was the AD. Is that his last name?
It might not be.
Gosh, what is
it? It starts with a C. I don't remember. It doesn't matter, though, for the story, but go ahead.
So that's driving me nuts now. But Carl Carlson was his name, right?
Just keep talking. I'll try and find it. Yeah.
He was the AD at Westmer and basketball coach at Westmer. He was also the AD and basketball coach at Aledo then. He was at both places, first at Westmer, first at and then second at Aledo, I should say. So anyway, one of the great stories about him that he told me is he was this unbelievable leaper in high school at Pecatonica. And so I was telling you how...
Carl Carlson,
yeah. And so I was telling you, so he had an injury then in after high school, but he was an unbelievable dunker in high school. And he wasn't a very tall guy, where he'd throw down these impressive dunks. And he said they were playing in Rockford before a CBA game. And he said, some of the guys in the CBA were like, man, who's that dude throwing down these unbelievable dunks? And they're like, Carl Carlson from Pecatonica. So I thought that was such a great story that he would tell stories like that. But anyway, that can always circle back to Westmore. Well, always does with what the winningest boys coach in IHSA history got his first win at Westmore, and that's the great Neil Alexander at Lincoln.
And then, which, by the way, I'm going to say this, and it's going to be a joke. So Pat Lower has been in town this week, and no, he's not going to be the next football coach at Mercer County. He's been helping my grandma and his mom, who is recovering from a successful hip surgery, right?
Yeah.
And we got to talking about the Pat Lower buzzer beater against the controversial buzzer beater against the Westmore Warriors in the regional semifinal, whatever, X amount of years ago. So it's been a Westmore week for me.
So the one thing that was hilarious back in that time frame, so the local cable TV provider had a cable access channel at the time.
Yeah.
And they called it TR Vision.
Okay.
For the Times Record.
Oh my Lord. Rest in peace. Holy smokes.
So that game was played, I mean, multiple times on TR Vision.
Oh, too. Really?
So, and they'd have the WMJ audio.
Oh,
to
wow!
It. So,
was that you on that game?
Yeah.
Did you do it by yourself, or did you?
John Hoshite.
Wow,
it with
that's
me.
Unbelievable.
So John Hoshite again had a great call at the end of that.
Was he? Who was doing play-by-play? You?
Yeah.
And John Hoshite with the expert color commentary. But
he was explaining the. I'll never forget the end of the broadcast because he was explaining the, you know, basically the dynamic of the official making the call at the end of the game. And I mean, his description of it was perfectly like an excellent broadcaster that he is.
Yes,
But anyway, I mean, TR, because the other thing about TR Vision, this it happened at the old station. We're talking about Alito Westmore. Yeah. So this, about 6 or 7 years ago, Mary Flint comes out to the station. She's like, hey, she goes, I got something I think you'd be interested in. He goes, she's like, this is an old TR vision of pack the place with Alito and Westmore in girls basketball.
Holy cow.
So like the names were like unbelievable. Like Tracy Lee was playing at the time, who's Mrs. Cook.
Mrs.
now.
Cook, the great chemistry
and, like,
teacher.
So Tatum and Tegan were, I mean, this must have been 10 years ago. They're little. They're like, that's Mrs. Lee playing, or that's Tanner Heath. Like Tanner Heath's mom was playing game for Westmore, and just some of the names and
I
just
love
watching
stuff like
them.
That.
Yeah, it was just so tremendous. It was like a who's who of like Mercer County back in the day.
The best thing about like the archives we have here is like whenever, whatever you end up hearing it, like it's just funny to hear the people who you know that, oh, hey, they were playing basketball for Alito or for Rock Ridge or for Sherrard or Westmore or whatever. It's, I love that stuff, man.
But
it's amazing.
But yeah, you weren't around. TR Vision was hilarious when I think about like that with the cable access channel here. And then it's like they would play like those games back over and over and over on TR Vision. But excellent. But I guess, too, before we get to Scott Verstrait here, you mentioned the football job. And you said Pat Lower is not going to be the head coach. And neither is Cully Welter. And neither is Brad Dixon. But
or Jeremy Adolphson.
Yeah. Or Joe Blinboom or whoever.
Nick Saban or...
Yeah. But whoever. They are going to, apparently, my understanding is, name or hire the new head coach this next Wednesday.
That's what it sounds like. Yep.
So we'll find that out on Wednesday, and we'll go from there, I guess.
Yeah, it's crazy that we're 7 months from football kicking off.
Well, be here before you know. Well, when is the girls basketball regional? First week of February? We're not that long
February
away.
February 15th is when the postseason
and
starts.
And I think,
for girls.
Isn't the first week of softball and baseball practice still in the last week of February? So
I don't know. I saw Coach Basala last night. I should have asked him. He would have known.
No,
he was rooting on the Tigers, man.
Well, there's a lot. There's a lot. Well, I know when I was over
and
there.
And so
for
I
the
think
tournament.
Torrey Leffel. I saw him there and Rusty Plunkett. A lot of purple and gold there, man. What a crowd! We talked about that earlier, but man, they've got a. And the band is awesome over there. It's great.
Listening to them in the background, yeah, they're sounding good. So then we have the games today.
They're sounding good.
They are. I love the Nat sound of the broadcast of hearing them in the background.
They had a tiger mascot last night, too. But it was orange and black, like Joe said. I guess he gets a point.
So I was there for the girls' game. Was that last week? And the band was there,
played all four Eagles, quarters.
Yeah, it was tremendous. Mm-hmm. I mean, they sounded excellent. So then we have the games, the two games today. We'll have one game Monday from the MLK Brickhouse Shootout in Moline. What's the schedule then for the rest of next week look like?
Oh, boy. I know, of course, we have Rock Ridge Sherrard Friday between the Monday and I think we might have a girls game Thursday, but I don't know who it is. You know what? It might be Rock Ridge Mercer County Girls Thursday. I think. I don't know. It's not in front of me. So
I think the Rockets, that'll be a decent game. Yeah, and the Rockets hung tough, man, against Sherrard this
probably
week.
Should've won.
Yeah. And then the Eagles, what, have they won three straight maybe?
One, because they lost to Sherrard.
And they play Liberty on Monday, right? Is that who they play at that shootout at Martin Luther down at Carthage?
Yes.
So they make back-to-back trips to Carthage. At least it's a 3 o'clock game and not a 6 o'clock JV start with 8-minute quarters on Monday night. But and then how soon are we from getting the pairings for girls basketball?
February 7th.
Oh, that's when when do the pairings come
out? February 7th.
Oh, not till then.
Yeah. The postseason is February 15th is the first day.
Oh, then we do have a while then. Yep. For
about a month, less than a month.
All right. Well, that's about all I have.
That's all I've got to say too, man. We're looking forward to today. I'm excited. Let's get a couple of wins on the WRMJ airwaves from Wharton Fieldhouse, man.
And it'll be great to hear Scott Verstrate coming up. He talks a lot about Western Big Six history too and kind of basketball and the Quad Cities and a little bit about conference affiliation in the Western Big Six. And he's just a really good guy. And by the way, you're talking about 2001 broadcast. Scotty V was on that broadcast because he was the Orion head coach at the time.
And he was the color commentator for the greatest broadcast in station history.
Well, and Scotty Verstrate was arguably the best, maybe the best sixth man in Western Big Six history. He played on a state tournament team for his dad in 1980. And I asked him who his opinion of the best ever Western Big Six basketball team. And he answers, and I answer.
That's enough to stick around.
Yeah, wow. But he talks about, you know, kind of how they organize the shootout and, you know, the legacy of it and sustaining it, I think is a pretty big deal. I mean, basketball's still a big thing in the Metro Quad Cities.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
With the Western Big Six.
Yep. I've got nothing else to say. I'm ready to get to Scott Verstrate. What did you and Brian talk about?
Well, I think it's interesting with the IHSA, with what they're trying. I don't think it's a big deal with what they're trying to do with softball and having the one weekend now moving forward with baseball and softball effective with next school year. So state tournaments for baseball and softball will be played over one week, and I'm still trying to figure out how they're going to do that with baseball. They're going to have to utilize, I would think, multiple venues or find a
right
huge
now
complex.
The baseball state tournament is 1A, 2A is a set, is a different venue than 3A, 4A.
Yeah, Joliet and Dozer Park.
I agree, though. So, like, I just think, I mean, what would that be? 8 semifinal games in a day? I mean, I don't know how you're going to get the some of those baseball games can take a very long time, so we'll see.
And then the weather's the impact. But I will
say this. Exactly. Imagine if it rains.
I will say what I do like. They're separate weekends, though. So
softball
and baseball. So I think that gives both sports the opportunity, especially those rare years where you have maybe two local schools playing in both sports, and both the fans from those schools can support both of those teams, which I do like that.
Yeah, me too.
But nothing yet, nothing more concrete on this classification thing, because the one note was in the IHSA minutes this week that, you know, they had feedback from the schools, but you have to sign into the school center to see it. Yeah. So they're just letting the schools peruse that right now, not the general public. And going to be interesting to see if there's anything definite when we head to next year for the high school football season.
And then you mentioned something like talking conference affiliation with Scott versus Strait coming up. Now, I heard something yesterday that isn't concrete, so I'm not going to like report on it.
But go ahead.
No, I'm not going to do that because that's not how you do it when you work in this.
Oh,
profession.
Okay. You got morals. They taught you right here. Good.
Right. So, but there, if something comes to fruition potentially in terms of like some local conferences, we'll report on it. But I've heard some rumblings underneath that potentially there could be some sort of maybe shift coming. So anyway, I'll. That's a tease ahead, maybe.
Is it something you're supportive of or against?
What potentially is being talked about, I could take it or leave it, but what it could maybe lead to, I would be a fan of. So that's what I'll say.
Well, I'll try to read between the lines and figure out what that is.
I'll maybe tell you during the commercial break.
I got something to tell you. Yeah. Rest in peace, Mr. Terry Bewley. In peace.
All right,
let's take a break. We'll come back and hear from Mr. Scotty Verstrait. This is the WMJ Sportsline from the Dale Jones Auctioneer Studios in downtown Aledo.
If you have farmland or machinery to sell, call Dale Jones of Merritt Auctions. The Merritt Auctions team have over 100 years of combined experience in auctions and real estate to help you gain full exposure to the market and achieve maximum return on your assets. Merritt Auctions specializes in live auctions, timed online-only auctions, and virtual online auctions. For a no-obligation consultation to sell your land or machinery, call Dale Jones today.
$15.29, but I'm here.
Hi, I'm Dale Jones with Merritt Auctions. Give me a call at 309-299-6400.
Discover the Diamond Ag difference and take your harvest to the next level. Diamond Ag offers the top seed brands in the industry, including Midwest, Stein, Brevant, LG, and Zotavo. Their nutritionals and crop protection will keep your fields healthy and resilient all year long, and no one in the ag retail industry offers a broader selection of fertilizer products and services. Contact seed manager Brian Brooks at 309-582-4681. Diamond Ag, with locations in Aledo, Alexis, and Knoxville, deeply rooted in quality people and quality service.
Step into style and comfort at 6140 Run in Galesburg. If you need new footwear, 6140 Run has just the right fit. Check out their quality brands for fitness, Hoka, Saucony, and Brooks, for just hanging out, Hey Dude and Birkenstock, and even for work, Red Wing and Wolverine. Whether you're hitting the trails, taking a stroll, or just kicking back, 6140 Run has you covered. Stop by their location at 185 Main Street in Galesburg and find your perfect pair today.
Are you ready for your teen to get their license? At Country Financial, they know it's scary when you see your kids back out of the driveway for the first time. If you know your young driver has the proper protection from Country Financial, it's a little easier. Contact your local Country Financial representative to chat about car insurance today.
In Aledo, see me, Tracy Bigham.
Or Jason Potter.
In Edgington, see me, Brent Bigham.
Policies issued by Country Mutual, Country Preferred, and Country Casualty Insurance Company, Bloomington, Illinois.
Jim Taylor back on WRMJ, WRMJ.com. Hey, this weekend, great opportunity to see some high school basketball at a storied venue called Wharton Fieldhouse. And, of course, you can see a couple of local teams playing there Saturday and Monday, the Sherrard Tigers and the Rockridge Rockets. They call it the Brick House Shootout. And the guy that helps organize this thing, I'll call him former Orion head basketball coach Scott Verstrait and current basketball official out there, right? So a fun opportunity Saturday and Monday, I think the sixth year for this thing, Scott Verstrait. What makes a good shootout?
Well, I think what makes art a good shootout is that you can organize the schedules and it's not like a tournament where you're not exactly sure where you're going to play or who's going to be playing. So you try to match up people where you produce the best game that you can produce at the level that they're at. And people want challenges when they come to a shootout. They're not looking for an easy win. They're looking to get better.
And you also have what as a backdrop? A thing that's called Wharton Fieldhouse. And I know maybe some people, I know even though you've been there for a long time, some people will say, well, you know, do we take this thing for granted? I think basketball historians would say, no, you don't do that. But I'm assuming that's a nice, you know, tool to recruit teams and schools to come to this thing.
Well, taken for granted, even as a Moliner, you try not to take it for granted. You're there every day. But this field house since 1928, before the mark, was built, it was the mark in the area. I mean, you're talking Dean Martin, Jerry Lewis, Johnny Cash, Patsy Cline, WWF, Hulk Hogan. The last concert there was Will Smith, DJ Jazzy Jeff. I mean, it's that, it's got that kind of history. It's got Red Auerbach, who coached there. It had the original NBA team there, that kind of thing. But it's also a great venue as far as how it's structured. A place that big, you don't get that close to the court, especially in the balcony, that type of thing. So it is a great tool. I know when you come in from Rock Ridge, I know when you come in from Sherrard, and we're going to have Riverdale there, and we're going to have some other teams there. We're talking to other schools too. It's a special thing when you're a player to come play in that venue and a game that is a real challenging game. You don't take it for granted.
And I think the other nice thing here is you're going across different classes to bring in schools, maybe at the 2A level, 1A level, 3A level, 4A level. And I'm assuming that's something you have to consider when you decide, hey, let's organize this thing. Do we just want to make it kind of a 4A shootout because that's the classification or Moline? In Moline, I should say, or do we want to provide some other opportunities for other schools from different classifications? So what is the mesh point in, I guess, doing that?
It's exactly like you're talking about. You look at 3A, 4A kind of loop together and 1A, 2A kind of loop together. But then you have schools that can go 2A to 4A. I mean, Rock Ridge, depending upon what's going on, Sherrard right now, how they're playing, you can throw a 4A school against them in a given night, and you can throw a great 2A school against them in a given night. So it gives you a little flexibility there. We bring in a lot of teams, and we pay a lot of money for overnight staying of teams that don't play Moline just to create that atmosphere. Rock Ridge, for example, this year is playing East Peoria on Saturday. East Peoria's got two of the best sophomores in the state. That is a great game for Rock Ridge. And then you go to Monday, Rock Ridge has Morgan Park out of Chicago. I mean, they got their hands full. Those are great games. But Rock Ridge, they can rise to both of those games too on a given night. So the unpredictability of the challenge is great.
And then I guess give us some of the other, you know, highlights or some of the other teams that you've brought in. And I don't know, too, I think in past years, maybe you reach across state lines and bring some teams from out of state. You know, what are some of the considerations to say, hey, who are we going to bring into this thing in 2025?
We have been looking about state lines, and I've got some contacts with teams in Missouri, for example. But I'm almost pulled away from not going outside of the state, too, because what we have is Western Illinois. You've got Moline, you've got East Moline, you got Rock Ridge, you got Sherrard, you got Riverdale, you got Almond, you got Quad City Christian, even Fulton in that area, playing against people that you can find throughout the state. And then you've got East Peoria out of the Peoria area. You got Morgan Park and a Chicago Diet out of the Chicago area. We've got East St. Louis coming up and Edwardsville coming out of the southern area. So we're really spreading out. The matchups are phenomenal. I would promote Moline first. I'll give Sean Taylor a lot of credit. He says, bring in the best. I'm not looking for a win. You know, we're looking to get ourselves ready. He's got Edwardsville on Saturday night. Edwardsville has one loss this year. That is a really good team. And he's got East St. Louis on Monday. That's a great team. The other team that I didn't mention was DeKalb, which is Mike Reynolds out of Galesburg. And DeKalb with Mike Reynolds' son is one of the hardest teams to play against in the area right now. We also got Batavia out of Chicago playing against them. Those are good matchups. United Township also has Glen Bard South out of Chicago that they're playing. United Township's playing Morgan Park. Sure, one of the fun games, really fun games, I know people in the area might not want to hear it, is Almond versus Quad City Christian. Quote unquote, maybe the denominational Super Bowl. But they bring a great crowd because that's kind of their community, and they're very even in their teams when they're doing it. I think that if Sherrard's got Chicago Diet, Sherrard's going to play Quad City Christian. Quad City Christian's more athletic than people realize. Alma's got their hands full with them.
Well, those are.
I think Sherrard's one of the up and coming teams right now.
Yeah, and I was going to say that's a great matchup with them playing Chicago Diet too. So that's a kind of a full day and a full 2 days of basketball. There's no question about that. And you know, the evolution of this thing in 6 years, you have to be pretty impressed with the body of work when you've been doing this for just 6 years and you've been able to establish, you know, I guess this type of platform with these type of games.
We're getting a better lineup every year, even though last year, if you remember, Jim, we had the snowstorm of the century and wiped out about four schedules that we tried to save the shootout. That was when that snow hit and just wiped. We had teams in town, but we had area teams that couldn't get out of their houses. The weather was so bad. This is the best lineup because people like Sean Taylor and the other coaches are saying, put somebody that's at our level or that it's not an automatic win. We won a game. If people come in over their head on a game, then I try to give them a second game where maybe they're a little bit over the head of that team, but that team can beat them in a given night. So you just try to make the best competition you can because that's what the fans want to see.
All right, so give me an update. Here's a guy that, you know, grew up in the Western Big Six, played for his dad, the legendary Whitey Verstraete in the late 70s, early 80s. I know this year, I think it was right before Christmas, I went and watched Quincy play United Township over at the Panther Den. Give me an update on the Western Big Six. Seems like, you know, Quincy really stout, and what Coach Say and Coach Whiteman are doing at UT. I love that. Moline's in the swing of things. What about Western Big Six basketball? Still a big thing?
It is a big thing this year because I just like you recap there, the teams are a little bit better in numbers this year than they've been. Quincy is the real deal. And the road to a state championship might be through Quincy. Definitely, they are solid in every level. Not only are they good athletes and big kids, they kind of look like Illinois out there with their height. They really mesh and play well together. They're going to be tough to beat. Rock Island is having the best year that they've had under Mr. Polite in a long time, and they look calm and confident out there. Rock Island is a force. Sean, obviously state championship Sean, Taylor and Moline can be a team that can make a run like that, but he's got work to do as far as depth. And when you play Quincy and you play Rock Island, you cannot have any one of the five guys on your floor having an off night. Everybody's got to be there. So really Rock Island and Quincy are in the driver's seat as far as the league championship. Andy Say and Toby are doing a great job at East Moline. They can knock off one of the top teams in a given night. Then there's another level. Maybe they get their own shootout. And then you've got Geneseo and Almond, or unfortunately are just going to be the also-rans when you go through that. Galesburg is kind of in the bottom of that as well as how they're competing. But it's Galesburg, and they have confidence and they got history, and in a given night, those kids can put it together. So they can do it. It's Moline lost to Quincy at home, and that's really going to give them a hurdle, because if you're going to win a championship this year in the Western Big Six, it's really tough to lose a home game. It's kind of like the Big Ten. When you watch Iowa, or you watch Northwestern, or you watch Illinois, everybody in the Big Ten is tough as nails at home.
And then I know, you know, conference affiliation is, and you know, an ever evolving thing, whether it's big schools or small schools. And this is just Jim Taylor individually talking to Scott Verstraete individually. I mean, do you think the Western Big Six is in pretty solid ground, you know, since the expansion with, you know, Geneseo coming in and Sterling coming in, or do you think there is the potential for some maybe some additions or some adjustments moving forward? What do you hear or what do you think about that?
Well, I think they're always fun conversations, but there's not really a lot of talk out there that I'm aware of, because outside of maybe a situation or a sport, the conference is super solid in its depth and all of the different activities that you have with it. The other issue that you have, it's hard for teams once they get into the conference to move out of it, to get other places to accept them. So dominoes have to fall that way if it's going to happen. And if you're not in the Western Big Six, you're moving down in your conferences as far as classes, not down as far as not as good a conferences. All the other conferences are great. I mean, there's great competitions, and maybe in some sports there's a better fit. The only thing that I would watch, Jim, if I was you, is football drives conferences.
Oh, yeah.
Period. I'm sorry, as far as formations of conferences.
No, I know.
Because it's so hard to schedule. So if the football world is talking about being somewhere else or moving or joining or having divisions or whatever, that would drive the conversation.
So I see you out and about still officiating a busy schedule, but I see a lot of the same guys officiating and same gals officiating, not a lot of newcomers, so to speak. I know there's an effort to try and get more and more officials. Where you know, you're on the front lines. What do you think right now?
I'm having a ball, and I like doing it, and I'm that terrible official. Sometimes I don't even like myself, but I have a lot of fun doing it because you're in the game and you're exercising and you're playing and you're trying to do your best. And I get to see Jimmy Taylor, and I get to see people that I know out there, and coaches. And I get to watch coaches, how they're developing their teams over time and strategies that's used. And they act like we don't listen to them. I really don't listen to them about my calls that much, but I listen to them about their calls with their players a lot. And that's kind of fun. But when you talk about the depth of officials, it is an issue, because there's kind of not a middle ground. A lot of older officials out there right now. There are some growth with young officials, but there's a big gap between that. When, for example, when you ref with a guy like Randy Hollerud, who communities have seen for quite a while, that guy can manage a game, as big a game as you want, by the book or by just, you know, running his own style and having his own judgment. Those guys just don't come around in a year or two or something like that. You don't get as good as Randy if you don't do it and work the big games and be in high pressure situations. So we've got good officials, young officials coming in, but they're a long ways from being through all that kind of history. Don Umland, who does a lot of reffing and works over at Augustana, for example, he's kind of a coordinator over there in the school at Augie. He does a lot of leagues. He gets college kids and he's training them. So there is a real effort to recruit younger people to get into it. It's a pretty good gig if you don't mind realizing that, you know, if you miss some calls or the game situation is not great, you feel kind of bad about it. If that doesn't bother you, you learn to not let it bother you that much, because you really want to do well and you want people to be happy. But it's really a pretty good profession if you're a younger person as far as making extra money.
Yeah, and you describe it perfectly with Randy Hollerud, how, like anything, it involves, what do they say, career development and continuing education. You know, you have to work at building your craft, so to speak, and it takes time to do that, and officiating is a perfect example. It takes some time in the sport, but again, maybe those early stages with the way, you know, I'm talking about the exception and not the rule here, how fan behavior can really ruin it maybe for those young officials at, you know, the lower levels, but we could talk about that forever.
And it's not about fans. Fans have always been like fans.
Yeah.
It's always been that way, and the crowds have always been bigger and things like that. So you just got to learn to move with it. People are good people as fans. Sometimes they act like not good people, but that's an act. I know what it's like to sit in the stands and go through with that. And I know what it's like when your team's not winning and it doesn't feel good and you don't like something. And, you know, that's the worst thing you've ever seen in your life. So what? Move on. I enjoy more working with the teams and the coaches and watching the players out there in the competition. And as official, you want to compete. I'll go back to a guy like Randy. And not only is he as good a book guy as you're going to see there and a rule guy on their seat, when you watch an official like that and you see how fast he spontaneously responds to every play on the dime, there's not a lot of hesitation times in what they do. People like him. You know that you got officials out there that are good when you see them, whether you like the call they make, but they're spot on the play when they do it. And they don't get confused and things like that. That's the problem that we have now with not having the middle ground officials, is that the younger people, if they're showing promise, are going to get moved along too fast into hard situations, and they'll do all right. But it's difficult. They're just not used to it.
All right. So I'm going to end it this way. So I mentioned, you know, you were a kid that grew up in the Western Big Six with your dad coaching, you know, in the league for many years. So I'll answer this question first. So the question is, who is the best Western Big Six basketball team you've ever seen play in person? And I'll say, I'm going to answer first. I'm going to say the 19, and this is really going to make you mad, and it's going to make Sean Taylor mad, and it's going to make Duncan Reed mad. I'm going to say the 1979 UT Panthers, who played the 1-2-2 ball press with Cliff Talley as their head coach, and they wore the Chuck Taylor black Converse all Friday nights during the Western Big Six season. Even though they didn't win a title, I still say they're the best Western Big Six team ever. That's Jim Taylor's pick.
Because you thought they were winning. You thought they were wearing Jim Taylor.
That's right.
Canvas, that's why. You've made everybody in the world mad except for Cliff Talley fans. But they're in the conversation. I'm putting the 1981 Quincy Blue Devils on top of the
list,
because they are the mythical national champions during that year. They had a run of a year and a half where they did not lose a game, state championship undefeated. And how many D1 players, including Bruce Douglas starting at Illinois as a freshman point guard, and Michael Payne starting at Iowa. You could go on and on. There's great teams in there. I think the Joey Range teams out of Galesburg are up there. I think that Moline and Frank had a great team and a couple great teams that year. And then, of course, I've got to say, I'm going to go into the argument with the Moline state champions. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Brock Harding and Owen Freeman up there, and Sean just a masterful job on it. And not only that, he always had five guys on the floor that could win a ball game. They didn't always, but if you needed somebody, they stepped up. So it's a great conversation.
Yeah, and then, of course, Jason Randall and Coach Sigel's great Rock team that beat the Centralia in the state title game.
I would mention Coach Sigel's team. Obviously, Duncan Reed's teams are up there, but I love making Coach Reed mad no matter where he's at right now. He would appreciate it. He would still appreciate it.
Yeah. All right. Well, see, we could talk about this for like ever. And Scott Verstraete, one of my favorites. And he was on arguably the greatest broadcast in the history of WRMJ when Sherrard upset Alleman in the 2001 high school basketball regional at the Don Morris Gymnasium. And like Scott Verstraete said, I love running into Coach Verstraete when he's officiating around the area. And again, if you want to see some quality, top-notch basketball this Saturday and Martin Luther King Jr. Day Monday, man, some great teams from across the state coming to that beautiful venue we call Wharton Fieldhouse. Scott Verstraete, always enjoy visiting with you, and have a good weekend at the Brick House, they say.
Always appreciate you, Mr. Voice of Western Illinois.
All right, and you're listening to WRMJ.
If you have farmland or machinery to sell, call Dale Jones of Merritt Auctions. The Merritt Auctions team have over 100 years of combined experience in auctions and real estate to help you gain full exposure to the market and achieve maximum return on your assets. Merritt Auctions specializes in live auctions, timed online-only auctions, and virtual online auctions. For a no-obligation consultation to sell your land or machinery, call Dale Jones today.
$15.29, but I'm here.
Hi, I'm Dale Jones with Merritt Auctions. Give me a call at 309-299-6400.
Discover the Diamond Ag difference and take your harvest to the next level. Diamond Ag offers the top seed brands in the industry, including Midwest, Stein, Brevant, LG, and Zotavo. Their nutritionals and crop protection will keep your fields healthy and resilient all year long, and no one in the ag retail industry offers a broader selection of fertilizer products and services. Contact seed manager Brian Brooks at 309-582-4681. Diamond Ag, with locations in Aledo, Alexis, and Knoxville, deeply rooted in quality people and quality service.
Step into style and comfort at 6140 Run in Galesburg. If you need new footwear, 6140 Run has just the right fit. Check out their quality brands for fitness, Hoka, Saucony, and Brooks, for just hanging out, Hey Dude and Birkenstock, and even for work, Red Wing and Wolverine. Whether you're hitting the trails, taking a stroll, or just kicking back, 6140 Run has you covered. Stop by their location at 185 Main Street in Galesburg and find your perfect pair today.
Are you ready for your teen to get their license? At Country Financial, they know it's scary when you see your kids back out of the driveway for the first time. If you know your young driver has the proper protection from Country Financial, it's a little easier. Contact your local Country Financial representative to chat about car insurance today.
In Aledo, see me, Tracy Bigham.
Or Jason Potter.
In Edgington, see me, Brent Bigham.
Policies issued by Country Mutual, Country Preferred, and Country Casualty Insurance Company, Bloomington, Illinois.
Hello again, everyone. I'm Brian Roush at WCSCI in Savannah. He's Jim Taylor at WRMJ in Aledo, and we're Jim and Brian talking high school sports on the radio. And on Wednesday, the IHSA Board of Directors met for a regularly scheduled meeting at the IHSA office, and they're going to move forward with a proposal that's going to change the format for softball and baseball, falling into a similar one-weekend event like we've seen with boys and girls basketball, among other sports.
Do you like the one weekend? I'm kind of in agreement with the one weekend, but my only complaint is, and I know I whine about this every year, specifically with football, which I know we're talking about eight classes there, but I just don't like the fact that it's always 1A and 2A that have to play the early games in the single weekend formats. Now, I kind of like the single weekend. I would like to see that altered, but I don't think it's going to be a problem for softball, because softball is played at a much different pace than baseball. I'm trying to figure out how they're going to do it with high school baseball four classes. I would assume they're going to have to utilize multiple venues to get that accomplished in 1 week. And if they would want to do it, I guess, at a single venue, right, they'd have to find a facility that has multiple diamonds. So what do you think about the format?
You know, I think it kind of makes sense from a scheduling perspective to kind of get everything done in that single weekend. But, you know, you throw in potential inclement weather. As you say, you're going to have, you know, championship diamonds, not just practice fields or whatever. If you're going to have it at one site, you're going to have multiple options. And I think it's going to be kind of interesting, because we've seen like the baseball tournament drag on because of extra innings and different things. And boy, it seems like you get behind schedule early and you never catch up.
And I know with the Louisville Slugger Complex, what that facility equates to with softball, there's no question easily that the IHSA state softball tournament can be held there on a single weekend and get all the games in there with 1A through 4A. Baseball, a little bit trickier, and I would assume they're probably going to have to utilize multiple sites, but that's something yet to be determined with the IHSA. Now, I do like the situation where it's going to be different weekends, where they have defined the softball weekend will be week 48 on the IHSA calendar. And then I think that the baseball state finals will be week 49. And that's the one thing that I did have a little issue with, you know, those years where you have the overlap. If you have two local schools maybe playing in the state softball or state baseball tournament, well, if it's 1A or 2A, they would be playing at the same weekend. So there is that opportunity for fans to attend baseball one weekend, softball the other weekend. So I do like that.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. And I think, you know, maybe sometimes it comes down to officiating. Are you going to have enough officials to go around and whatnot? But, yeah, separate it out so both sports kind of get a chance to get everyone's attention.
And, again, this information available at the IHSA website. You can find it at IHSA.org. And, again, looking at the contracts moving forward with the venues, I think that's one of the issues that the IHSA has to iron out. Now, I did see one other item of interest, and they didn't provide a lot of information on this, but I'm going to read it. The board reviewed the results of and discussed a questionnaire that was sent to the official representative at each IHSA member school in January. The questionnaire topics included postseason classification cutoffs, the multiplier waiver, and the success formula. The results of the questionnaire can be viewed in the IHSA Schools Center. But, of course, you have to have a school password and username for that. But I would be interested to see what those results were from the questionnaire, and maybe we'll get that here down the road. He's Brian Roush at WCCI Radio in Savannah. I'm Jim Taylor at WMJ Radio in Aledo. And this is Jim and Brian talking high school sports on the radio.
If you have farmland or machinery to sell, call Dale Jones of Merritt Auctions. The Merritt Auctions team have over 100 years of combined experience in auctions and real estate to help you gain full exposure to the market and achieve maximum return on your assets. Merritt Auctions specializes in live auctions, timed online-only auctions, and virtual online auctions. For a no-obligation consultation to sell your land or machinery, call Dale Jones today.
$15.29, but I'm here.
Hi, I'm Dale Jones with Merritt Auctions. Give me a call at 309-299-6400.
Discover the Diamond Ag difference and take your harvest to the next level. Diamond Ag offers the top seed brands in the industry, including Midwest, Stein, Brevant, LG, and Zotavo. Their nutritionals and crop protection will keep your fields healthy and resilient all year long, and no one in the ag retail industry offers a broader selection of fertilizer products and services. Contact seed manager Brian Brooks at 309-582-4681. Diamond Ag, with locations in Aledo, Alexis, and Knoxville, deeply rooted in quality people and quality service.
Step into style and comfort at 6140 Run in Galesburg. If you need new footwear, 6140 Run has just the right fit. Check out their quality brands for fitness, Hoka, Saucony, and Brooks, for just hanging out, Hey Dude and Birkenstock, and even for work, Red Wing and Wolverine. Whether you're hitting the trails, taking a stroll, or just kicking back, 6140 Run has you covered. Stop by their location at 185 Main Street in Galesburg and find your perfect pair today.
Are you ready for your teen to get their license? At Country Financial, they know it's scary when you see your kids back out of the driveway for the first time. If you know your young driver has the proper protection from Country Financial, it's a little easier. Contact your local Country Financial representative to chat about car insurance today.
In Aledo, see me, Tracy Bigham.
Or Jason Potter.
In Edgington, see me, Brent Bigham.
Policies issued by Country Mutual, Country Preferred, and Country Casualty Insurance Company, Bloomington, Illinois.
Let's wind down the WMJ Sports Line on a Saturday morning from the Dale Jones Auctioneer Studios in downtown Aledo. We have a doubleheader of high school basketball coming up here later, right around the noon hour, with the Rockridge Rockets getting a chance to take on East Peoria and
the Raiders.
That's right. And
that's maroon and maroon going at it.
Yeah.
Right?
And then I was thinking about that. Well, we were talking about it in the office earlier this week. So it's weird that East Peoria had a recruit go and have a pretty successful career at Wisconsin. That's Mike Vershaw, who then became the head coach at Monmouth College. He didn't have near the career that Ethan Happ had at Wisconsin, of course, a former Rockridge Rocket. So the connection there with East Peoria and Rockridge with the Wisconsin basketball program. And I think Mike Vershaw played for Bo Ryan. And then, the great opportunity then for Sherrard and Diet. I'm really interested in that. But East Peoria sounds like they're the future of the Mid-Illini with two really good sophomores in that program. So really two chances for the Rockets today and the Tigers to measure up against, I think, two very good opponents.
Yep, excited for it, man. Let's head to Wharton. Are you going or are you staying in Aledo today?
I'll be watching Rock Falls Mercer County girls basketball.
Oh, that's right. Tegan's playing. Oh, my gosh. I forgot about that.
And is that that's like a quadruple header today,
all
right?
All day. And I hope to anybody in the Rock Falls School District that none of their families have a JV girls basketball player and a varsity boys basketball player. Could you imagine how brutal of a miserable day that would be?
Oh, I think it'd be a fun day.
Oh, stuck in Aledo for that long.
Maybe they'll be hopefully utilize some of our local businesses here in Mercer County as you hear all day.
Come take a look at the new lights downtown Aledo. Just don't look at the WRMJ sign because it's still broken.
Hey, and then Morgan Park, who do they have on their roster? They have...
I forget. I don't have the roster in front of me, but their best player is a very high-level football recruit.
No kidding. Yes. And are they 3A or 4A? Do you know?
I believe 3A, but okay. I don't quote me on that.
All right. Well, what a tremendous...
Their run was all their state titles were 3A with, like, Io and those guys.
Marcus Levette.
Yep, the man. He's a lefty.
And then they had a kid that went to Bradley.
Josh
Cunningham. Yep. So they've had some really dynamic players. And then they had, why can't I remember the coaches?
Nick Irvin.
And I remember...
Adam Miller played there as well.
That's right. And I remember the one year we were at the state tournament at Peoria and we're sitting on the baseline and all the Irvin brothers were there watching the... brother coach Morgan Park, and they were interacting and they were telling him, you know, basically do this, do that. And he was kind of listening to him. And I said to one of the guys who were like sitting two seats, I said, well, you guys are going to get medals if you win this thing. Yeah. And the guy goes, well, that's Mac Irvin down there. Yeah. Who's in charge of the Mac Irvin Fire. And that was the day where I looked down and I'm like, hey, I said, is that Mark Aguirre sitting next to him? And they're like, yeah, how you know Mark Aguirre? And I said, well, I'm a child of the 70s and 80s. I remember the DePaul Blue Demons back then, and I remember his great NBA career. And I got a picture taken with him that day down at the Peoria Civic Center, but I just thought it was kind of hilarious. So that was when, I think maybe Io was just a freshman then, right?
That was way before.
Because they were playing Lincoln, Neil Alexander's team, and he had the one kid that went to Ohio that was an unbelievable player. I mean, he was a one-man wrecking crew that had to run through, dribble the ball up the floor, hand it off, run through screens, get it back, and try to score. Yeah. And they had, like, this unbelievable lead in the first half and then just couldn't hang on to it because of the sheer power and talent that Morgan Park team had. But I'll never forget. And that's why I tell people, when I look back at kind of the history of the IHSA and the state tournament, and people would always say, oh, you know, the attendance at Peoria was terrible, whatever. And I'm like, well, that's your fault because
the
level of talent the games I saw in that building, I'll never forget. They're unbelievable players where you talk about Jalen Brunson or Io or
Okafor. Derek Rose.
And Shire when he played at Glenbrook
John
North.
Livingston.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
A lot of dudes who played a lot of years.
I'm glad
NBA.
I was there for all of them. So,
yep.
Tremendous.
Yeah, and I love it in Champaign too, but you're right. The run in Peoria, people did kind of, I think it was a little bit revisionist when they're like, oh, it's terrible. And no, I
wasn't
disagree
terrible
with
for
that.
Me.
No, it was good. And if you go and, I mean, you saw a lot of high-level games, high-level players, and just, you know, I remember the year Bloomington Central Catholic, you alluded to that game earlier when they upset Rock Ridge. They ended up winning the state title that year in triple overtime in the championship game. And then the Seton Academy, which Terry Tracy loves. I can hear him right now saying, where are you?
Seton Academy.
Yeah, that was classic when they didn't accept them. Well, not classic, but it's like a kind of a funny
memory.
That school's closed now, but like they didn't accept them. I remember that when they left the trophy, and that was bonkers, man. They were upset about that.
And then one of my favorite memories is when North Lawndale played IVC in that year. IVC.
Chillicothe.
Yeah, IVC lost to Tyson Blazer at the – Illinois at the State Farm Classic at Illinois Wesleyan, and then North Lawndale held on to the ball for like 15 minutes as IVC stayed in the zone to end the first half. It was the craziest thing I ever saw, where they just, it was actually 15 true minutes of just the clock running and stuff.
And we mentioned all the great moments at the Peoria Civic Center. What about Carson Frakes?
Oh,
right?
There's no question. I mean, that's
that might be the greatest moment ever. I mean, just unbelievable. That's going to be 10 years old next year.
I can't believe that.
So anyway.
All right, enough about that. And like I said, if you haven't ever been, and maybe you have been, but if you haven't been to Wharton ever and you want to see two local teams play that are really good and they are matched up against good opponents, and then you can stick around and watch some other games, Wharton Fieldhouse is worth it. If you, and maybe you were there 35 years ago or whatever, but man, go back up to that place. It's, there's just something about watching a game in that historic venue. And especially when two local teams are playing. But anyway, that's my opinion.
Diatribe.
That's right. All right, so that's coming up here around the noon hour today. We do have Illini basketball tomorrow, Michigan State. What time's the broadcast time for that?
Tomorrow, 11 a.m. tip-off.
Is that, and that's on the road?
Correct.
Yeah, that's going to be a tough one.
East Lansing.
That is going to be a tough one. All right, that'll do it for the WMJ Sports Line on a Saturday morning. For Ty Taylor, Jim Taylor, WMJ Sports.
This has been Sports Line on WRMJ and WRMJ.com. Brought to you by Diamond Ag, your local ag retail supplier, built from your local specifications with locations in Aledo, Alexis, and Knoxville. Your local country financial representatives, Tracy Bigham, Jason Potter, and Brent Bigham. Offering insurance for your life, health, home, farm, or business by 6140 Running Galesburg. Your spot for custom-fitted running and walking shoes, Hey Dude shoes, and Birkenstock sandals, plus Red Wing and Wolverine work boots. And by Dale Jones with Merritt Auctions. If you have farmland or machinery to sell, call Dale at 309-299-6400. The preceding has been a presentation of WRMJ Sports, your high school sports voice of Western Illinois.